the scavenger from Stanford to tell us about Relaxion with particle protection.
Relaxing. So
we're ready to relax.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here. My first time visiting Perimeter. I'll be here all week. So yeah, feel free to come chat with me. And today I want to tell you about a reasonably recent work that I did with Anson, who's also at Stanford, about Relaxion, a new way to do Relaxions. And well, the motivation for this is the motivation that we all know, and at least a lot of us have spent a lot of time pursuing, which is understanding why the Higgs mass is small. This has definitely driven the field for a while, and we've had many ideas. I would say it's sort of the main one, the one that would have most people satisfied with if we found it as an answer, was to invoke some symmetry that under which the mass of the Higgs is charged. And if this is the case, then we can just do a usual effective field theory trick of saying that, well, if some operator is protected by a symmetry, then having it with a small coefficient is technically natural because it can be explained by a small breaking of that symmetry in the UV. And the way this usually sort of turn out at low energies is that for this, the mass operator to have some symmetry, you need to have some more structure, which is encoded in some new degrees of freedom, which also enter the calculation of the Higgs mass. And instead of getting it that it's proportional to some UV scale, it ends up being proportional to the mass scale at which these new degrees of freedom show up. And this, we've had many ideas for this, and it would make us very happy. But unfortunately, we just don't know where these X-ray states are. We were very confident that we were going to find them, and they turned out to either not be there or just be really well hidden. Another thing that has also been proposed as a solution is to change paradigm a little bit. And instead of considering the Higgs mass as just sort of some input parameter of your theory, you can consider it as a dynamical variable that can depend on in what state you are, sort of the value of other fields in the theory. And in this case, then depending on the configuration of these other fields, this mass could change. And maybe this can help you explain why the Higgs mass is small. But even in this case, naturalness is still a good guiding principle. And what it would tell us is that sort of the general idea is that maybe you have many, many sort of vacua for your theory, so many, many quasi-stationary points for your theory. And in almost all of them, the mass of the Higgs would be very large, sort of proportional to some, again, some UV scale. But if you have a lot of those vacua, maybe in some of them, it turns out to be accidentally small. And this maybe is a hope to explain the hierarchy problem. But of course, it begs the question of why would we be in such a nice special place? It could be that it's, and there is one way to explain this question, which is to sort of invoke an entropic principle and say, well, the reason why we're in this special point is because it is required for something like us to exist, so some sort of atomic principle. And a similar explanation for another hierarchy problem, which is the cosmological constant problem, is the only one we have. So maybe the entropic explanation is something that we shouldn't dismiss. But in this talk, I'll take a slightly different approach, which is that let's always delegate the entropic answer as some sort of last resort, and let's see if there's no other option between symmetry or entropics. And an idea in this direction was put forth by Peter, David, and Surjit, I guess already almost 2 years now ago. And it is still a multiverse solution, but instead of using entropics to explain why the Higgs mass is small, it sort of uses the sort of cosmological evolution of the universe to say that, oh, maybe if you start out with some generic initial conditions for your fields, you will have some, you'll be attracted to this very special vacuum. So sort of the dynamics of the early universe will drag your theory as it evolves to live near one of the special vacuum. And the sort of the easiest model, sort of the simplest model that they have for this, which is ruled out by, for example, the strong CP problem, but it's very minimal, is just take the standard model and then add 1 degree of freedom, which we sort of already have in the back of our mind might be there, which is the QCD axion, plus one small modification, which is if you just put in the QCD axion, it has this periodic potential, this cosine phi over f. And you could imagine that in principle it has many minima, but the way it is, all those minima are really the same. So it's really, you should think that this field is sort of compact in this in the original scenario, and so it's really only one minima. But if you introduce something that breaks.
It's not really one minima, what do you mean?
No, I mean, it couldn't be more than one, yeah.
It's the testing minima.
No. In the relaxant, there will be a gazillion, yeah. No, I'm just saying that if I only had the QCD axion without the extra shift symmetry breaking, then there would really be a shift symmetry for the variable would really be compact. So there would be maybe like 1-3, depending on the number of sort of Peutz Jeghikun charges. And, no, you're right. There will be a gazillion vector. Yes, you're right.
I'm trying not to say anything, by the way. You've had this discussion many times with some people, I know.
Yes, I know. I'll try to sort of make what I think are the good parts clear, but I'll mention that definitely there are many bad things associated with the idea. So,
okay.
But
which means they don't work, right?
Well, we can. I think that maybe putting it too strongly, but we can chat. Sorry, for the all relaxant ideas or just sort of the specific one.
I mean, what do you mean generic initial conditions? What fix those initial conditions without solving eternal inflation problems?
Yeah, there are many problems with the inflation scenario, but we don't really know that much about inflation. So I would say that.
I mean, what does it mean that you don't know? You have a system that's strongly coupled. You have things that are incalculable, and then you convince yourself to stick to a regime where you can actually think you can calculate. So does it put you anywhere? Does it solve anything? Or are you ignoring a huge parameter space where other things can happen? And in fact, you know that if you take a naive scenario, there's 10 to the 30 more possibilities that you end up with a Higgs instead than a final one.
Yeah, no. I mean, what I'm saying is that we don't really know how inflation starts, right? So I'm just saying that if I decouple what initiated inflation.
But that doesn't matter, right? And supposedly you can eternally inflate because it depends on where you put the zero of the cosmological constant. That's another thing.
Yeah, I know. I completely agree that the cosmological constant at least seems to be, worse in this case. But even in the standard model, if we don't really have any I mean we don't really have a full picture for an entropic solution to the CC either, right? I mean we don't have a full UV construction.
But you don't have to. That's the point of the profits, right? You can ignore those measures.
Well.
While here they're staring you at the face because you're saying, "Oh, I have to follow my field and end up where I end up."
Yeah. No.
That's it. Sure. Some people, eminent people, claim that inflation also leads you to a multiverse.
Yeah,
this is what I'm saying too, right?
About internal inflation.
Yeah.
Those people claim that therefore it predicts nothing.
Sorry?
Therefore it doesn't predict anything.
Oh, yeah.
I can name Paul Steinbach.
I'll try to sort of shy away from questions of how inflation started
but isn't this relevant here if you're talking about cosmological evolution?
Well, if I allow myself to say at this initial time I had this starting point.
Yeah, but you don't know how people can measure that.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that's a general problem. I agree.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to show us how to slow down cosmological scalars with particle production, right?
Yes.
That's
okay. Okay. Okay, so yeah, just sort of going back to sort of the original ideas, which is not what Jojo said, is that in addition to the QCD, just sort of the normal QCD potential, you assume that the shift symmetry of the axion is broken by some other dynamics, which allows it to also, as the axion changes value, scan the mass of the Higgs. And because now you've introduced an extra source of shift symmetry breaking, and you want to claim that your theory is natural, you also should include self-interactions and interactions of the scalar to other fields. But you can parameterize this by this small shift symmetry breaking parameter, which I'll call epsilon here. So anything that breaks this special shift symmetry of the QCD axion generates a potential, but you always have this small coupling that accompanies it. And that sort of protects phi from, for example, getting a much bigger mass than just the one given by the QCD potential. And then the idea is that as the field evolves, if you allow the field to have a very, very large excursion, it can actually completely cancel or partially cancel the original very large UV mass of the Higgs. And but you need to sort of make the point at which this very large cancellation happens somewhat special. And the way they do it here is that, in order for there to be an actual minima for phi, or at least to have many minima for phi, I need the potential associated with QCD, the slope of this potential, to be comparable with the slope associated with this extra shift symmetry breaking, such that I can actually have the derivative being zero. And for that to be true, there is a minimum value for the Higgs valve, because the amplitude for that QCD potential depends on the quark masses, so it depends on the Higgs mass. And that tells you that you'll only have minima for Higgs valves that are at least given by this combination of sort of small and large parameters. And this is how they explain how the sort of maybe the weak scale is special. That a combination of sort of some UV parameter that is sort of when you'll have to solve a large hierarchy problem. So this typically will solve the hierarchy problem up to some UV scale, which is generically going to be much smaller than the Planck scale, and then this shift symmetry breaking and other parameters, this combination can give you 100 GeV, a sort of a special scale. Yeah, sorry. And of course, and then the idea of sort of generic initial conditions, what I mean by that is that saying that, so let me say that I start in the point with a value of phi such that I'm in the region where no minima exists. So I'll say that this is starting out in some sort of generic initial condition. And then what I'll want to happen during the evolution of the universe is that phi increases value in the way I drew here until it finds one of these minima, and then I need it to stop in one of these minima. So, but of course, if I wanted to stop, and I'm saying that I'm starting off around here in this region where there are no minima, I start out with too much energy. So I'll only stop if there is some sort of friction dissipation mechanism that allows me to take that energy away such that I can eventually stop when this minima exist.
Does it have to be
250 GeV? So it depends on the parameters of the theory.
That's
the
standard.
Sorry?
Then.
Yeah. The thing that the model will explain is that how, without putting in 250 GeV as a special parameter that's not protected by anything, you put other parameters, some of which are very large and not protected, and this one small parameter, which is associated with a shift, with a symmetry breaking, and you can get 250 GeV out. That's sort of the logic. So there are these two very important different ingredients that you need. You need something that is stopping or some selection mechanism that's telling you how you're going to decide that 100 GeV is a special scale. And then you also need a dissipation mechanism, which is what's allowing you to lose energy and actually stop when you find this special scale. And for most of the relaxion models, the way this was done is that they had some sort of non-perturbative QCD-like potential, which is some periodic potential, whose height depended on the Higgs valve. And then the dissipation was through Hubble friction. So it, and which is just that this is happening in an expanding universe. And then as long as the potential is not too steep, you can be in a slow rho regime for the axion, such that the kinetic term for the axion is given just as this combination of D prime over Hubble. Now, well, we know the in this scenario, so this is sort of roughly all of the relaxation models until we had our idea, is you know how fast you're scanning because you know phi dot. And so you know in each Hubble time how much field range you're going to travel. And it's just given by sort of this small parameter, this slope of the potential divided by Hubble squared. And if you remember, we needed to do a field excursion that allowed us to cancel that lambda squared term in the Higgs mass. So we need to do a very large field excursion, which is parametrically given by the cutoff squared over the small parameter. And from this, you can immediately see that how many e-foldings, if this is happening during inflation, you would need to actually have a successful scanning mechanism. Which, in principle, might seem like this. There's a priori no big relationship between H and epsilon, except that you expect H to be generically bigger than epsilon if you don't want phi to play a role in the inflation sector. But in principle, this could be a not very large number. However, if you actually want to remain in a real slow roll regime, or just ensure that you're going to stop once this energy minima start appearing, you need to ensure that the typical kinetic energy you have is smaller than those barriers that are showing up. And once you put that in, you find that the number of e-foldings that you need is given by this cutoff to the fourth divided by the height of the barrier to the fourth. So if you just plug in some models for like their QCD type model, this lambda b is about 100 MeV, right? So 0.1 GeV. And let's say you want to at least solve the small hierarchy problem, so you want to push the cutoff to 10 TeV. So that already gives you 10 to the 20 as the number of e-foldings. So that seems like a very strange inflationary scenario, even without the problems Mina was alluding to.
Because the starting point is a problem. When you say generic, I don't know what it means. So I know every time you plug a scale of Hubble, it's a different number because it assumes a certain scale of zero. And then you run for a long time, and how does that long time compare to your Hubble rate? Because it depends on where the what sets the how much you follow the slow roll. What do you say after a long time?
Sorry, I mean, you imagine that this is happening during inflation, so I would claim that...
But what sets your clock here? I mean, what is your zero? I mean, what your Hubble rate is in all these... in these assumptions, you assume a Hubble rate, right?
Yeah.
But what is it?
But we do that in almost any inflation model, right? You assume some Hubble rate for almost any inflation model.
But here it depends on what you care about, where you end up, right? So you care about the Hubble of the final product. So what sets anyway,
let's continue.
Yeah.
Why is the biological constant small in that vacuum?
Yeah.
And not in any of these large things. And there's a huge number of them. Right? So
yeah.
So they're worried about the spacing between
The spacing between the energy density in each of those vacuum, the difference is much bigger than the current CC.
And then when you say, what is its generic initial conditions? I don't know what that means, because it assumes a certain measure automatically. The moment you make that statement, you assume a measure.
No, but independent of a measure, you just make a small logical constant by a factor of 10.
No, there's several problems. Yeah. There's two problems, and they are both equally severe.
Like a very character problem.
Yeah, I think you're assigning a measure to the severity of
the problem. Yes, exactly.
How many e-folds?
So for them, they had, if you just take the numbers from the QCD model, it's 10 to the 20.
You can need 60 e-folds,
okay. Yeah. So that's why.
We get many more, it's okay.
Yeah.
If you need 60 to get S, it's basically 0.96.
But typically it's somewhat challenging to do that while keeping other aspects of inflation to work without tuning too much the inflation potential. So so just sort of to summarize what is the usual idea with this, let's say normal relaxing models, is that you need some stopping mechanism, and that typically requires you to put in the Higgs-Vaff sensitivity into some sort of non-perturbative sector, some QCD-like potential. And that can be intentional with the strong CP problem, although this is easy to solve. But it's generically very hard to make the barrier heights larger than the weak scale, because they need to know about the Higgs-Vaff, but the strong dynamics cannot break the electroweak scale itself. Otherwise, it would look like Technicolor. So it's generically hard to have those barrier heights larger than V. And the dissipation mechanism is Hubble inflation that requires many, many E foldings. It requires that everything is happening during inflation. So it gives you a number of constraints. And the idea that we worked on sort of solves this problem by just using a single mechanism for both stopping the deciding that 100 GeV is special, so it's sort of the selection mechanism, and also the dissipation mechanism are coming from the same source, and it will be from particle production. And the intuition is fairly easy. It's just let's assume that in the universe, the starting points of this relaxion that now will have nothing to do with the QCD action, it's just some name that stuck. The Higgs has a very, very large negative mass, so that the VEV is very, very large. Well, in this case, most of the particles in the standard model are very, very heavy. And therefore, if I want to use particle production as a friction mechanism, that won't happen because those particles are so heavy that I can't really have production of them through a time-dependent field. So the idea here will be that as the field is scanning, it is a time-dependent field, so it could in principle be creating particles. But only when the Higgs-Vaff becomes light, it actually has access to producing particles, and then it knows that it's time to stop. So sort of the friction mechanism will only really turn on once the Higgs-Vaff is around 100 GeV. And at that point, it can stop in minima that, and as long as this is efficient enough, it will stop in minimum in which the Higgs-Vaff is similar to when this particle production started. So similar to which have values close to 100 GeV. So this is just a quick outline. I'll discuss the basic mechanism that sort of in some simple toy model, and then I'll work through how to put it in the standard model, and then to actually have it work in a given some history. Sort of, yeah. First, I'll just say how do I now embed this into the standard model, and then how to have some either inflation model or some model in which this happens after inflation. Sort of, what are the requirements? What are the conditions that I need in the beginning? And here is just sort of trying to keep me on a slide. I think there are some good features of the relaxation models. It is technically natural, and it's only technically natural. It's not. It has a lot of small numbers. But there is some hope to embed it into some UV extension where it is made fully natural. It is, in principle, a non-entropic multiverse-type solution, bearing the heavy criticism that it doesn't play along with the CC. And it's a relatively unexplored idea. So maybe there's something along the lines of a relaxion that actually will look appealing. And the conclusion will be that we are not quite there yet. But since it's new, I think it's worth thinking about. There are a number of bad features, some of which we made improvements, some of which we have not. It introduces a lot of new small parameters and lots of new hierarchies, which can all be made technically natural. It is generically involves making your inflation model more and more complicated. And if you try to tackle it with solutions to the CC, it's made much worse. And well, there are static problems, and well,
sorry,
you name it.
That was
non-anthropic multiverse, because the moment you have multiverse, there is no choice. As a matter of fact, in some bucket you may live and in some other you may not. So it's not a choice, right? The moment
you have a multiverse, it comes automatically.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. This
if you post some dynamic mechanism, it only populates the ones that you live in.
No, but that's not. Because coming back to my previous question, so here, if I add CC to your picture, most likely it will be in the vacuum with large heat wave, and anthropic weather will force us to live there, and because there are much more of those vacuum, this model predicts Higgs wave, which is large, not small. Right?
But it's doing anthropic, will not live there, so it doesn't.
No, because here, one is not using
Higgs.
Only for the Higgs, right?
Yeah. Oh, if you put anthropics for the Higgs, too, yeah, then you don't have to do all this hoopla.
Yeah.
You just have two scanners, one for the Higgs, one for the CC, and you're done.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah. Well. But then you have to assume something like some atomic principle, right? You have to make some reasoning for why the Higgs also needed to be light.
That's fine.
You mean
In if you want to, I mean, if you're claiming
I would say, well, if you're not doing that, this model predicts that Higgs is heavy and it's excluded. It's fine.
You can rewrite the problem. If you try to have it, it's a bit normalized. Then, if there's no particle between the top, like energy, and the tuning is only I could live with that.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't look like we're seeing anything else about the top.
Yep.
Yeah, but
so what's wrong with that?
Well, it's very different than the idea of effective theories that we sort of got used to, in that it's really what we're seeing is somewhat unavoidable low energy description of some other UV theory, and since we don't know how to explain other things, like we don't know how to quantize gravity, we don't know how to explain neutrino masses, you know that there are very likely other thresholds that we will need to explain. So
all
I would
say is if there's no particle above the top, after the 750 UV resonance, it's us.
Let's talk about particle prediction.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, otherwise I won't get there.
Wait.
You're happy to talk about. Yes. So let me get you the idea, and in order to sort of just isolate what is the mechanism, let me just work on a very simple model that has all the required ingredients, which is, let me work in a theory where the only fields are a U1 gauge field, a Higgs, which is charged under this U1 gauge field, and some relaxion type particle. So those are the only ingredients that I'll need. And because I don't really need Hubble friction to do anything, let me also do it in the static universe for now. Just imagine that someone is doing that in a box in a lab somewhere. And here the let me assume that I'll set up my initial conditions such that the Higgs mass start out being very negative, so very large, sort of sensitive to this UV scale, but negative, which means that the gauge fields also are very massive. So the mass of the gauge fields are pushed to the cutoff. Now, if I look at the equations of motion for the gauge fields, I can look, and let me just look at the transverse polarizations, because those are the only ones that will do anything interesting. I take phi to just be a classical background field, then I just get this quadratic equation for the gauge fields. And you see that the phi dot enters the dispersion relation of A. And this is the reason why I can get very efficient particle production with this coupling. Now, if I take phi dot to be roughly a constant, I can look at really the full dispersion relation for A, and I find that depending on the size of phi dot over f, as long as phi dot over f is bigger than mass of the gauge field, there are negative values for omega squared, which signal that there's some instability in the system. And once you have this instability, you'll have some modes that start growing exponentially. And they start growing exponentially, roughly with this phi dot over f, which is sort of, if I take k's of order phi dot over f, this ends up also being the size of omega. So now assume that you have the following setup. So you have phi dot that someone set up initially in a lab or something like this, which is bigger than the barriers that show up in this axon-like potential. And yeah, I forgot to mention that because we won't really need the Higgs, because particle production will already be our stopping mechanism, I'll just assume that this barriers are just constant, so they don't really depend on the value of any other field. So it could be, for example, if you had some QCD-like confinement scale, but with all the quarks being heavier than confinement, or something like this. And so you start off with this kinetic energy that's enough for you to just zoom through these barriers. And as I said, the mass of the gauge field being very large around the cutoff. So phi dot over f will be smaller than this cutoff. And so it's, in particular, it's also smaller than the mass of the gauge field. And so in this setup, there are no unstable modes of the gauge field. So there's no particle production there. But because phi dot is changing, eventually it will cancel most of the Higgs mass. And at that point, the Higgs VEF can become much smaller than the cutoff. Once this happens, then, the VEF will continue to decrease, and at some point, phi dot over f will become bigger than this than the VEF. And at that point, you start to have developed these unstable modes. And once this happens, you just have this exponential particle production of gauge fields. And then the idea would be that, and then you start to lose energy and you can fall into one of these potentials. Although it turns out to be a little bit more complicated than that. One reason is that, you start to just put all this energy into this gauge field, and if you actually want to stop in one of those barriers, you need to lose at least an order one of the initial kinetic energy of phi. Which means that now the gauge fields themselves have about order one energy of the original kinetic energy of phi, and they can just start interacting with themselves and creating Higgses, and if there were other charged particles, they could create the other charged particles, and so you very fast you create a plasma which has a characteristic temperature of about the kinetic energy that was originally in the relaxing field. That energy is much bigger than what the Higgs VEV is at that point, because remember, this only started when the Higgs VEV had already been scanned to be pretty small. So now you're in a scenario where you have a temperature that's much above the Higgs mass. And what happens then is that you get, because of finite temperature effects, you will restore the gauge symmetry. So now, in principle, the gauge field mass is set to zero. Which is good because in principle you can now continue to lose energy even as phi dot decreases. But on the other hand, because you have this plasma, there are screening effects in the plasma which turn out, which end up actually decreasing the rate at which you can lose energy.
Yeah. Doesn't the rate depend on the coupling doesn't come in, but the
fade
that you have.
Is what you write. Yeah, so I absorbed the coupling into definition of the 1 over f. So everything comes. The rate will be.
So the temperature that already has that factor in there.
Where the
so where do you. Sorry. So let's say that I make this, take f to infinity, none of this should happen.
None of this should happen, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do I say that the temperature shouldn't. Doesn't that mean that also the particle production should go down?
Yeah. So let's say I want to restore the couplings. This should really be alpha over f here.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming that alpha will be close to.
I'm asking the temperatures just depends on phi dot.
Yeah.
So why does the coupling cancel? This is what I don't understand.
Oh, for the temperature.
Yeah, for the temperature.
Oh, sure. So yes. So the idea is the following. So let's say I start losing energy with this particle production, right?
Yes.
At a rate that does know about the coupling.
Yes.
So and then I'm assuming that it will be efficient enough for me to lose an order one of my energy.
Yeah. Very fast. You're assuming it's big enough that it happens very quickly.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, then if this happens, I get to this scenario.
Is that yeah, if you start decreasing it, then the temperature should go down as well.
Right? Yeah, yeah, the temperature.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm assuming that this time scale is much faster than the time scale for the temperature to go. Even when I plug in the stringflation where I can redshift the temperature,
I see.
I'm assuming that the time scales will be fast enough that this is a small effect. So now, in order to see if I still have this particle production and what is the penalty that I'm paying for this finite temperature effect, I can just write down the same dispersion, but now include the finite temperature polarization correction to this dispersion relation. And it's given by a Debye mass squared times some function of the ratio between the frequency and the momentum. And we want to see if there are solutions to this dispersion relation in a very specific range. We want to see if there is an imaginary omega that solves this dispersion relation. And also, we expect that both the frequency and k will be much smaller than the Debye mass, just because, as I said, the temperature is much bigger than sort of the Higgs-Vev. And those things here are sort of, at most, the Higgs-Vev, k and omega. And this extra thing here is sort of, it will be a posteriori justified in this next step. So if I do this assumption, if I assume that I can, that there is this separation between k and omega, I can expand this f to first order. And the first order is just a linear term in omega over k. And something that's linear in omega looks a lot like some damping term. And that's really what it does. It just, there is still a solution for this equation. But it's but you have to pay a penalty, like a damping penalty, for this exponential growth, which is also similar to if you have some harmonic force driving an oscillator and there's a small friction, you know that you get exponential growth, but the exponential growth is slowed down by this damping. And so now you have the original phi dot over f, but you have this extra phi dot over f, which is at most order v of the weak scale, divided by this Debye mass, which is really the original temperature. So it's a huge penalty. And it sort of, will shrink the parameter space, sort of it will decrease the kinds of cutoffs we can get, as I'll show later. So here, just a very quick summary and see if everyone is happy with the mechanism so far. So this is the idea of the model, is just a very simple axion-like particle with a constant size barrier and this coupling to FF dual. It will work both selecting V because it will only start to produce particles once V is small, and it creates friction because, well, as I'm producing particles, I'm losing energy, and that's the dissipation mechanism. And the relevant time scale, once I've lost part of my energy, is given by this rate phi dot, suppressed by the temperature, which will generically be large. Not as large as the cutoff, but generically large. So how do I embed this into the standard model? And, well, it's simple enough that you don't need to work that hard to embed it in the standard model. You can now just take the Higgs to be our Higgs. The relaxin is some degree of freedom that you're adding anyway, and you add it exactly the same way. And the only thing that looks a little funny in the way you embed it to the standard model is that you have to couple it to this very specific combination of the electric gauge bosons. And the reason why you have to do this funny combination is, well, I wanted to know that particles are becoming light. And if it always coupled to the photon, there would always be a light gauge boson around that it could radiate. So there wouldn't be anything special about the light Higgs valve. And the nice thing about this combination is that it doesn't couple to two photons. So it always has to produce at least one heavy guy. And again, this is another place in which this might look funny. It's like a very specific combination of these two field strengths. But it's technically natural. If I set it in the UV, it will not generate a coupling to the photon in the IR. And so I'll just relegate this as a UV problem. You could imagine that maybe if you embed this into a left-right symmetric model.
So you're coupling to these non-photon electric sector,
yeah.
And you're going to slow down at a particular point where the kinetic energy, this guy is specific with the mass of this guy.
Uh-huh.
But the field value of this relaxing field, this setting, the think that, right?
Yeah.
So that's actually also setting those boson masses as well. So
yeah, exactly.
You don't have to work that out to get it to all fit.
Oh, no. Yeah, but that's exactly the game we're playing, right? So we're, because the Higgs is setting the mass of these guys,
yeah.
If the relaxon is still in a part of its parameters where the mass is very big, it means that those guys are very heavy and I can't produce them.
So
it's only when I've scanned enough the Higgs such that those guys are made light. Yeah, so the relaxon itself doesn't care particularly about the Higgs mass, it cares about this guy's masses, but because they're correlated. Yeah.
People at Stanford who experimentally want to detect the action, converting it to a photon.
Yes.
Magnetic field. So yours doesn't couple to photons.
Yeah, ours doesn't couple to photons. Yeah,
how are you going to detect this thing?
You're
introducing a problem. So it hasn't been detected.
Yeah, it will be.
Another problem.
Yes. But in order to have also, a lot of these axion detections, not all of them, also require it to be dark matter. And I will, for now at least, not put this requirement on my relaxion.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, as I can tell you later, you don't have time to do it in the talk. I have to actually make it unstable because otherwise I end up with too much of it.
Wait,
yeah.
What does it decay to it?
So it can decay, yeah. So depends on the mass parameter. If we're doing it, can I tell you afterwards?
Yes,
because otherwise it will. Yeah. Because it depends a lot on they're sort of really two stars. If it's happening during inflation or after inflation, so it's better if I tell you after. Yeah, right after the talk, I'll be happy to tell you. So this will be the extra conditions that I'll require. I want to do sub Planck and field excursions because even after working on the relaxion, I still feel uncomfortable doing super Planck and field excursions. If I can get away with not having to do it, I'll stay there. So that's that tells me. And if you remember, the field excursions for my phi are parametrically given by the cutoff squared over epsilon. So if I want that to be less than m Planck, this gives me a lower bound on epsilon. So epsilon can't be arbitrarily small. I also want to have those minima to exist. If the slope of the potential is too big, then there are no minima. It looks like some small jigsing of a line, but there are no minima. So that puts another requirement. So that tells me there's some minimum value for the size of those barriers. And I also want the separation, the change in Higgs mass in neighboring minima to be smaller than the electroweak scale. Otherwise, I'd be incredibly lucky to lay down sort of have scanned fine enough to hit 100 GeV. But those are sort of generic conditions. And then if I have all of this, then it's very much like the previous model in which it was not the standard model. If I start off with kinetic energies which are bigger than the barrier, it will scan the Higgs mass until the gauge bosons become light, which are correlated with the Higgs VEV. Once that happens, it starts losing energy and it can fall into one of these minima and will just get stuck there. So the only thing that you need to make sure for all of this game to work is that you need to make sure that you're losing energy efficiently enough. Because let's say that, I do start producing particles once I hit Higgs VEVs of 200 GeV. But I lose energy so slowly that when I eventually have lost enough energy to fall into a trap, I completely forgot where I started. So then there will be no correlation between the final Higgs VEV and the starting point. So then it's not really a selection mechanism. So I need to make sure that once this energy starts being lost, I actually fall into one of these potential wells fast compared to how fast I'm scanning the Higgs VEV, basically. And so this is just the condition, so I know that the Higgs mass changes linearly in phi, and so I can just find it as a function of of time, and delta t here is some sort of typical time scale for losing energy, which is again given by the rate at which you're producing particles, right? So therefore, you know that delta m is proportional to this energy loss time, and this energy loss time, if you look, it's a high negative power of phi dot. So it's dominated at that sort of right before you actually get trapped. So the typical phi dot for when you get trapped is given roughly by the size of the barrier. So if I plug in that for the time, I get now an upper bound on epsilon. So now I have both an upper and a lower bound on epsilon. Right, and that sort of is roughly what will put the strongest constraints on the model. So here are just, well, now I just want to tell you how can I put this to work in inflation if I allow myself to say this is the initial conditions for inflation. And well, again, I always want phi dot to be bigger than the size of the barriers, otherwise it would start out trapped and there would be nothing to talk about. And I also want Hubble to be bigger than cutoff squared over M Planck. And that's just because the energy density in phi over the whole scanning mechanism will change by order the cutoff. And I don't want it to impact inflation in any way because it would just make the model more complicated. So I'll also require that of Hubble. Now, if this is happening during inflation, I can, and I want to see sort of what is the rough behavior with phi. I definitely don't want phi to go into a slow roll regime, because if you remember, a slow roll regime tells me that phi dot is proportional to the derivative of the potential. So it would mean that it would go around one bump and then get stuck, which is no good. But I can imagine that, let me imagine that phi dot could go through these bumps relatively fast, such that I can sort of average out these bumps. Then it would see a potential that is just given by the linear slope on average. And if I assume that, then I would expect that on average, phi dot is given by just the slow roll value without, if I just turned off the barriers. Now it turns out that if I try to find a solution for phi dot, which is given by that plus a small correction, as long as this average value is larger than the size of the barriers, it's true that phi dot goes to a solution that is given by this average value plus small oscillations on top of it. And so as long as I start above this, it will actually quickly approach this sort of, kind of like an attractor solution. So I just, if I start out with these initial conditions, I just sort of get driven to this almost slow roll case. But it's important that it's not really slow roll, otherwise it would get stuck. Now, because I know the average value of phi dot, I know what temperature things were going to get heated to when particle production start, and it's just given by sort of the typical phi dot. And I just put there the number of e-foldings required to do scanning, just to remind you. And if I use now both the lower and the upper bound on epsilon that I had gotten from both requiring that I don't get super Planck and field excursions, but also that the production is efficient enough that I still remember that I'm supposed to fall in the minimum with 100 GeV, I get this sort of simple but sort of funny looking constraint on the cutoff. So the cutoff is some complicated weighted geometric mean of the hour week scalar, so 200 GeV, and M Planck times the number of e-foldings required to scan. And let's say I want to have a relatively normal inflationary history, so I want e-foldings of order 100, let's say 1,000, it doesn't really matter since I'm going to take a sixth square root of that. I get that the maximum cutoff is 10 to the 5, and there are other constraints that are slightly more complicated that even if I abandon this delta n equals 100, I can only push this to 10 to the 6. So it's really only solving a small hierarchy problem, and we need.
Question, don't you have a loop level mix? You have a mixing between phi and the Higgs.
Yeah.
When the Higgs get, and doesn't that introduce at loop level a coupling to the photon?
But that it's true f squared, right? Not f tilde.
Yeah,
and then and f squared is fine.
F squared is fine.
F squared
why?
Is fine. It's just because it sort of it basically the only reason why we can get a large effect is that the coupling we're putting in, we can get a large effect without having large without having to fine tune the potential for phi is that the FF tilde is respects the shift symmetry. If we try to do anything that would break the shift symmetry, typically. In order to get a larger,
so it's always suppressed compared to the.
It's always suppressed, and also, for some reason that I think at some point I understood, but now I don't remember from the top of my head, dev squared doesn't typically lead to this unstable mode, at least not for this homogeneous solution. Maybe if you find some funny background, yeah. It has to be the FF tilde. But it's true, yeah, it will definitely generate.
So if you require that the spacing between these potentials was less than MeV, milli electron volt to the fourth, would that wipe out the parameter space? Is that just not realizable? Did you guys look into that?
I think that's right. I have to remember. I don't remember right now, but...
Because it seems like you guys have the opportunity to do that because you're not dealing with the same constraints.
Yeah, but I think it would require us making epsilon way too small. So maybe if we relax the super Plancken field excursions, which was giving us a lower bound on epsilon, because we need all the f's to be bigger than the cutoff, because we don't want to say how this compact some sort of symmetry breaking that generated this sort of pseudo Goldstone bosons. We don't want to put that into the theory. We just want to work in the effective theory. So that already tells us that f should be bigger than the cutoff. Mm-hmm. And then if I think on top of that, put in the requirement that there are no super Plancken field excursions, I think you cannot get milli EV. Milli EV is pretty small. So I think, and there were other constraints that were not as severe as that. That's why I'm not mentioning them. But I think I think if you ignore a lot of these constraints, I'm sure you could do it. But I think there would be other constraints that would come to harm you before you could get down to mu EV.
I think
at some point you would lower epsilon so much that you would enter this quantum versus classical evolution and things like this. And also we do need a minimum phi dot. Something I'm glazing over, because typically for our parameters, the particle production is very efficient, is that you actually need to have time to exponentiate the gauge field. Otherwise, it just becomes that the energy loss is some high power of phi dot over f. It's only if you build up that exponential that you get something much stronger. So if epsilon is too small, it means that phi dot is typically too small too. Yeah, but we didn't think that long about it. Yeah, and here are just some sort of example parameters just to sort of get a feel for like typical sizes of things. And you see that sort of epsilon is sort of kV-ish, and the mass of epsilon in this case would actually be on the orders of 100 MeV, just because of the size of this barrier here compared to phi prime, f prime. But one thing that it's sort of interesting and potentially could have cool implications, although we haven't yet found that many, is that because we don't need the Hubble friction really to do almost anything in our model, the scanning could happen after inflation. So for example, one way where this could happen is, well, let's say that I had exactly the same construction as before, but maybe my h over epsilon is too big compared to the number of e-foldings that I got from my inflationary model. So then I would have done some scanning during inflation, but I wouldn't have quite made it to the point where particles could be produced. Can this happen after inflation ends? And the answer is yes, but with caveats. It can happen, but I cannot have reheated the standard model, or at least I cannot have reheated the standard model to very high temperatures. The reason being that, well, if I have very high temperatures, now my relaxation would be scanning the temperature-dependent Higgs potential. And so it would find some minima where at that point the Higgs was live, but then later on it would not turn out to not be the right point. An easy case, let's imagine that maybe inflation ended and we entered some preheating scenario where all the energy is transferred to some reheaton or something like this, but the standard model is still not quite scanned. Well, at that point, because inflation has ended, Hubble starts to decrease. And remember that phi dot was roughly being given by a slow roll solution. So as Hubble's decrease, phi dot actually increases. And as soon as Hubble becomes close to epsilon, phi dot becomes really large, because I leave this low rho regime at that point. And so I get phi dot gets close to the cutoff. And at that point, actually, within one Hubble time, the scanning would be done. Although I guess there would be some uncontrollable effects, given that now there's no small parameter, it's cutoff over cutoff would show up everywhere. But in this case, if I put in phi dot equals cutoff squared, it means that once I create all these particles, it would reheat everything to energies comparable to the cutoff. And if I put in again those bounds for epsilon, but now with my temperature being of order of the cutoff, I get that in this scenario, I could at most get cutoffs of sort of 40 TeV. So I can barely solve this small hierarchy problem. But of course, if I relax the super Planckian field excursion constraint, I could improve this. But again, not sure how. Yeah, it seems like a difficult trade-off. Maybe I'm happy to say that some new physics will show up at 40 TeV. And yeah, so that brings me to my conclusions. So particle production is an efficient mechanism to both dissipate the energy of the relaxion and to select the small Higgs bev. Sort of, it seems it has, it's nice that it has the two ingredients kind of right there. It's qualitatively new way to realize this relaxion mechanism. It can work without super Planckian excursions and sort of with more normal amounts of inflation. Although I must say that it still requires low scale inflation, which as far as I know is quite challenging from the module building point of view. And it has sort of this nice feature which sounds nicer than what we have been able to make with it so far, which is that it can happen, the scanning could even happen after inflation. So it could be some different type of dynamics. And that's what I had to tell you. Thanks.
It's interesting because one of the low scale inflation scenarios that isn't necessarily considered fine tuned is using the same mechanism that you guys are using to slow down the relaxion, except you just use it to slow down the photon instead.
But it's that one that you need to have many thresholds, right, in order to do it effectively? I don't know. I had never thought about particle production. It seems that there are some other cool things that might be good to use it for, but I have one other example that I would be happy to tell you offline.
I hate to return to this growth and thing that also agree that you have to tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I think the phrase of people, there is a consensus you can't avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
You're forced into a multiverse. Growth and thing like the multiverse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. Steinhaus certainly doesn't, as we all know. So the problem is that you have to face this inflation. And the problem is that you end up, what you're doing is trying to use a model, it's a model,
mm-hmm.
inflation model, to solve this naturalist problem, standard. Standard model works very well, except for this issue. And how natural is it what you get out of the end?
I think that the question of the center model is natural or not is slightly more complicated, and I think we're likely to find other physics, right? I mean, in principle, I'm not sure it's 100% true that once you include, for example, neutrino masses, let me even ignore gravity, ignore the fact that there are Landau poles in some of the U1s and other couplings, but even if I just try to explain neutrino masses, it seems to indicate that there should be other states. Of course, it could be, there are ways around it. You could just have direct partners for the neutrino, and maybe at some point we'll know. I think if we do measure sort of neutrino-less double beta decay or some other properties of lepton number violation, then we would know for sure that there are other scales. But I think it's, I personally don't believe that there's a desert all the way up. So I think there we should think about how to sort of cut off sensitivity to this higher scale things that I think we're bound to discover.
Well, the Higgs was a problem because of the way it.
Yeah, but it will always, I mean, if it couples to the standard model, it's very hard to not have the Higgs couple to it sort of just by loop. If you go to two loops, typically the Higgs will couple to it.
Probably exists because the Higgs is assumed to be a point.
Yeah, if it's if the Higgs is composite, then we should be, then we're in much better luck, because unless things are incredibly fine-tuned, we should see, we should start to resolve the fact that the Higgs, and then we'll know it experimentally, I think, in not the very far future, so I think that's okay.
On this hopeful note, let's say again.